Good afternoon. I'm here on the director of the Mario I. Nansen for International Studies. I'm also a professor of anthropology at Cornell. I'd like to welcome you all to the second event in a new series, eco-series, called Faith, Hope, and Knowledge, Interfaith Dialogues for Global Justice and Peace. And this is a joint project of the Hainan Center and Cornell United Religious Work. And it's a kind of first of kind, experimental project to foster conversation across wide spectrum of members of the Cornell community about the relationship between academic and spiritual and religious life on one hand, and about the global issues, urgent issues of the kind of justice. And today we have a special guest, a delegation of people from Nagasaki, Japan, and we have a special speaker from Nagasaki who will address issues that are particularly vital, that is, issues related to nuclear weapons and global peace practices. And when the steering committee of this initiative met a couple of months ago, we decided to choose peace as the focal theme, organizing theme for this semester. And partly because of the developing issues surrounding North Korea. And this particular event was organized precisely to address that urgent issue. And I hope that today's presentation and conversation will give us insights, valuable insights into how to think about the current threat and current situation, both intellectually and politically and spiritually. So, before I introduce the speaker, I'd like to ask Dan McMullen, who is the director of Cornell United Religious Work and also Associate Dean for Students, focusing on spirituality and meaning making.
Well, let me offer my welcome as well to you for this second in a series of collaborative conversations. You know, at a time when civility seems to be rather slipping away from our national and even international dialogue, this opportunity for engagement among students, among faculty, among chaplains, about serious matters that need both academic and a religious perspective is a marvelous opportunity. So I'm grateful that you've come here to be a part of this conversation, hoping that you will come again as this collaboration unfolds in ways yet to be determined. From my own tradition, I would just like to say that the British Cardinal John Henry Newman talked about the fact that friendship is a high ideal among human persons. And friendship is developed, as he says, cor ad cor loquitur, hearts speaking to other hearts. So at least from my perspective as a religious leader here on this campus, I hope that we touch your hearts in these conversations and that you feel able to let your heart be opened even a bit more to share what you know, what you believe, and what you hope with others whose hearts are being opened as well by these conversations. So Mr. Ehara's presence here this afternoon is and as well as the delegation that came with him, we're grateful for your presence here because I believe it's a sweet and vital necessity for our hearts to speak to each other. And thank you once again for your presence here. So I'll be excited.
Thank you, Dan. Just like to point out that in the front row here is nine-person delegation from Nagasaki. I have known them for a year or so, and I've learned so much from them about what peace is all about. And one main thing I've learned is that peace is not really an abstract idea, but it's really about really working together to search for what that means, that peace means. And they are exemplaries. They are all each accomplished person that has dedicated his or her time and labor and money to come here, but also work together with a wide spectrum of citizens in Nagasaki and elsewhere. I can talk more about their activities later, but I'd just like to acknowledge their presence, and please join me in welcoming them. I'd like to introduce, it's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Toyokazu Ihara. He is an atomic bomb survivor from Nagasaki. And he worked for a long period of time for a union of workers in an electric power industry in Kyushu. And then he joined the Socialist Party, and then he was elected to Nagasaki City Council in the 1980s, and he was re-elected six times, and he served in that capacity until 2015. He was a very popular and influential council member, really shaping today's Nagasaki in a consequential fashion. And he's been also very active in Nagasaki's quite unique and distinctive interfaith initiative on peace. And this initiative is interesting because it's spearheaded by the Catholic Church, which has a very long tradition in Nagasaki since the 16th century, 17th century, but also the Shinto shrine originally set up to persecute Christians. So now those two forces are working together, particularly after the experience of the bombing of Nagasaki, to create a condition for continual peace activism. And as you probably know, the Nagasaki's peace activism is very international. The fact that they are here, it's nothing new. They've been doing this for many, many years. And I bowed and also have been inspired by their dedication to this cause. And this particular moment, I think their work is very important. The experience is very important. And I'm really looking forward to learning from today's conversation. So just a brief note. So this lecture will be delivered in Japanese, and English translation will be projected on the screen. And in the Q&A session, we have to ask some of you and the audience who understand both languages to help me navigate the difficult multi-language situation. So I'm not really good at translation, so if you could help me out, that'd be great. And also, Mr. Ihara has brought two letters, very special letters, from the mayor of Nagasaki, Tomihisa Tao. And one letter is to our president, the president, not Trump, Mr. Trump, but Martha Pollack, And the other letter is to the mayor of Ithaca. And I think we'll have an opportunity to learn a bit about the contents of those letters at the beginning of this entire lecture. But without further ado, I'd like to ask you to properly welcome Ms. Ayala.
Thank you for coming today. My name is Toyokazu Ihara. Toyokazu means Oriental number one. Dozo yoroshiku onegai itashimasu. Kono tabi, Cornell Daigaku 人類学教授の宮崎博一様、同じくアナリース・ライルズ様ご夫妻のご紹介により、長い歴史と学術的伝統を有し、国際的に著名なここ、コーネル大学で、私に原爆被爆体験や、平和活動についてお話しする機会を与えていただいたことを関係者の皆様へまずお礼申し上げます。ありがとうございます。また今年になって極めて短い期間に長崎市の多くの子どもたちと大人との友好交流促進に大きく寄与された宮崎ザビエル君に深く敬意を表します。 Thank you。 すなわち長崎の港が開かれた1571年よりも21年も遡る1550年ポルトガル船で長崎の平戸に初めて入港し、日本におけるキリスト教布教の歴史を開いた聖フランシスコ・ザビエルの功績を思い起こし、ロチェスター科学博物館に生きている長崎玉子とザビエル君との出会いが今回の交流発展につながったこと、まさに運命的だと受け止めているからであります。さて、キューバ危機の回避という不滅の偉業を成し遂げたアメリカの第35代大統領ジョン・ F ・ケネディは、人類が戦争を終わらせなければ戦争が人類を終わらせるだろうと警告されました。また1981年2月に日本を初めて訪問された空飛ぶ教皇ヨハネ・パウロ2世は広島長崎の原爆の惨状に触れて、戦争は人間の仕業です、戦争は死ですと演説し、核兵器の廃絶を強く訴えられました。絶対悪の兵器、原子爆弾が広島長崎に投下され、72年目を迎えた今年2017年7月7日、国連は長い長い態度を経てついに核兵器禁止条約に到達し、9月20日から批准のための署名が始まりました。 核兵器保有国と核の傘の下で抑止力に頼る国々はその実効性を批判し反対していますが、核兵器廃絶への端緒を開く世界規範が成立したことは快挙であり、私たち被爆者は多数の国々の批准を得て条約の早期発効に期待しています。1936年3月9日生まれの私は、幼い頃を日本の戦時体制の下で過ごし、神の国日本は戦争に負けることはないと教えられ、誤って朝鮮人民や中国人民を蔑視し、区役に使われるのを常識として鬼畜米英の標語のもとに敵に見立てた人形を竹槍で突き刺す訓練に全力を挙げていました。しかし次第に相次ぐ空襲に逃げ回り、暗い防空壕で息を潜める日々から、日本の敗戦は近いと密かに感じていました。1945年8月6日の広島市に続いて、3日後の8月9日午前11時2分、アメリカが長崎に投下した一発のプルトニウム型原子爆弾は、長崎市北部浦上の上空500メートルで爆裂し、都市の3分の1を破壊し、一瞬にして町を廃墟にしました。数千度とも言われた熱風で燃え上がるキノコ雲の下は、想像を絶する修羅場となり、日本国民だけでなく、強制連行された中国人や強制動員された朝鮮人、戦時捕虜のアメリカ人やその他の国々の人々を含むおよそ7万4000人が無差別に殺され、同時に7万5000人が負傷いたしました。人間ばかりではありません。虫や鳥や犬や猫、牛や馬などの動物、そして植物など生き物すべてが死滅いたしました。当時私は9歳、爆心地から 6.5 キロメートル離れた深い山の中にいて、直接的被害を逃れましたが、原爆投下の翌日から被爆者の救援や死体処理業務に参加した母、姉、兄たちは歯茎から血を出し、髪が抜け、脱力感に襲われ、原因不明の苦しみに耐えながらも、後に判明した原爆病により次々に亡くなりました。私たち原爆被爆者は、広島と長崎に異なる種類の原爆が投下されたことについて、アメリカ合衆国における日本国への報復論や原爆投下の正当性を肯定してはいません。これは明らかに原子爆弾による都市と人命に及ぼす破壊力の実験であり、世界の覇権を目指したものでなかったのかとの疑いを持っています。ここで当時の被害状況を説明いたします。広島に投下された原子爆弾は、リトルボーイという名前で呼ばれておりまして、 TNT 火薬およそ16キロトン、重さ 4トンの原子爆弾でございました。この一発で およそ21万9130人が死傷いたしました。長崎市に投下された8月9日に投下された原子爆弾はプルトニウム239を核物質として広島とは異なる形でした。ファットマンと呼ばれる TNT 火薬21キロトンの爆発力に相当する 4.5 トンもの重量の爆弾で、およそ15万人がこの一発で死傷いたしました。このように形が異なっております。長崎に投下された原子爆弾のこのキノコ雲の下にいた人たちは、村上天主堂、東洋一の希望を誇っておりました村上天主堂を形ないまでに破壊をいたしました。城山国民学校は、学校も 0.5 キロの距離で写真のように破壊されました。新興前国民学校の救護所に収容された人たちの惨状も目を覆うばかりです。山王神社の鳥居は片足だけで残りました。右にある楠の木は全く葉も枯れて、本当にこれは生き残れるかという心配を出しました。これは当時の軍服です。柱時計は11時2分を指したまま止まっています。被爆した瓦は表面が泡立って焼けただれています。背中一面に発症を受けた少年は16歳の郵便配達夫でした。2年半病に伏せて、ようやく命を取り留めましたけれども、72年間死の苦しみから逃れることはできませんでした。残念ながら先月30日にお亡くなりになりました。2016年、昨年5月27日、現職のアメリカ大統領として初めて広島を訪問され、私たち被爆者も歓迎をしたバラク・オバマ大統領は、2009年4月5日、チェコ共和国プラハ市で核なき世界を目指す、その方向を明確に示し、核兵器を使用したことのある唯一の核保有国として、米国は行動する道義的責任があり、核兵器廃絶に向けて世界を主導するとの考えを大胆に示され、世界中に希望を与え、その年のノーベル平和賞に輝かれました。しかし、2016年5月27日、広島における道義的な目覚めの始まりを表す17分間の演説の冒頭は、71年前、雲一つない晴れた朝、死が空から降り、世界が変わりましたと、あまりにも散文的な表現で、原子雲の下で地獄を体験し、71年を過ぎた今でもなお、後遺障害と万発被害の恐怖から解放されることなく、子や孫の世代にまで心配を残している被爆者からは、怒りの声が発せられました。それでも、原爆によって廃墟となった都市は、アメリカをはじめ、 国際的な支援のもとに復興し、世界の平和と安定に向けたさまざまな努力が重ねられている今日、日本国が果たすべき役割を真剣に考えるならば、オバマ大統領が演説の中で申された文明という名の戦争の歴史を繰り返さず、暴力を正当化せず、 8.6 の朝の記憶を風化させることなく核なき世界を目指すというオバマ大統領の強い意志を包含するメッセージを正しく受け止め、実現すべき先駆的地位にあることを自覚しなければなりません。私たち被爆者は絶対悪の原爆による悲劇を語るときにも、日中戦争やアジア太平洋戦争によって日本が起こした過去の残酷な加害の歴史と反省と謝罪の心を決して忘れないように自戒しています。我が国は遠くない過去の歴史を深く反省し、世界平和の規範たる日本国憲法を制定し守り抜いて70年が経ちました。非核三原則を国是とし、核兵器廃絶の実現を目指し、積極的平和主義を貫くと公言している日本政府の現状は、客観的に世界の人々からはどのように評価されているのでしょうか。日本国憲法に反して強力な軍事力を保有し、特定秘密保護法の制定、共謀罪施行、安保法制整備、憲法改正など戦争する国への暴走は、北東アジアの非核地帯構想の実現とは全く逆に、近隣諸国との友好交流の発展を阻害しているのではないかと私は思います。科学の発展が人類の幸せに貢献せず、資源の独占と貧富の差が拡大する限り、世界の不安定性はますます拡大し、自国第一主義ではごく少数の特定の国しか存在し得なくなるでしょう。科学の成果は人類の幸福のために共有すべきものと思います。国連の核兵器禁止条約には被爆者の苦悩に言及した上で、原子爆弾の開発、実験、生産、保有、使用のみならず威嚇も禁止し、被害者の救済義務と非核教育の徹底も盛り込まれています。核保有国や核の傘の下にある諸国が加盟する道も開かれてはいますが、目的達成の前途は容易なものではないでしょう。現在世界には原子爆弾14,900発が保有されていると言われています。これを無力化するスタートは今新たに始まったと認識しておくべきでありましょう。私たち原爆被爆者は、沖縄の苦悩と福島第一原発爆発による耐え難い苦しみを共有しています。アジア太平洋戦争が終わって72年後の今なお、戦時下にある沖縄は真に日本の異性化にある都市とは言えません。また1953年12月8日、国連総会で米国のアイゼンハワー大統領が行った演説、アトムズ・フォー・ピースは、原子爆弾の限りなき開発競争に 歯止めをかけるべき事情があったとしても、その後原子力発電所の爆発事故による危険性と恐怖は、イギリスのシェラフィールド、アメリカのスリーマイル、ソ連のチェルノブイリ、そして2011年3月11日の福島第一原発事故に連鎖しています。福島第一原発事故はいまだに全く収束しておらず、危険性を取り除くことは不可能に近いでありましょう。それでもなお我が国の日本政府は原発の再稼働を急ぎ、インドとの技術協力協定を結び、輸出にも積極的であります。しかも原子爆弾の弾頭となる危険性があるプルトニウムを48トンも保有し、潜在的核抑止力だと位置づけているではありませんか。私たち被爆者は核と人類とは共存できないと声を上げ、原子力発電所と関連施設の建設や再稼働に強く反対し、すべての原子力発電所の廃炉を求めています。私たちは武力で平和は守れないことを確信し、人間による安全保障を主張します。広島と長崎に投下された原子爆弾とは比較にならない威力と破壊力を持つ原子爆弾が9カ国で1万4900発も保有され、もし誤って使用されるとするならば、地球は破滅の危機にさらされるでしょう。核も戦争もない地球を次の世代へとの訴えと実現は、私たちの歴史的使命であります。私たちは長崎から世界に訴えています。高校生平和大使による20年間の活動は、継承を受け止めた若い力の象徴であります。2015年9月には戦時捕虜として異国で命を落とされたアメリカ、イギリス、オランダ及びオーストラリアの犠牲者73名と、捕虜として強制労働に従事させられたすべての戦争被害者のための記念碑を民間人の力で建立し、毎年追悼行事を実行しています。また捕虜が解放されて祖国に帰るまでのおよそ1ヶ月間に、米軍は B-29 によって4回にわたり救援物資の投下を試みました。しかし不幸にもその中の1機が濃霧にまかれて墜落をし、13名の命が失われ、1名のみが地元民の協力で助かりました。私たちはその記念碑も建立し、生存者の遺族と救援した人々との交流も始まりました。世界で初めて無差別爆撃の地はスペインのゲルニカと言われています。ピカソによる巨大絵画ゲルニカ、これが有名ですが、2012年4月からゲルニカ空爆被害者団体と長崎原爆被爆者団体との交流が深められ、4月26日の記念日にゲルニカ・ルモ市の市長立ち会いのもとで、共に平和の道を歩む協力協定を締結いたしました。この協定の骨子は、市民を犠牲にするいかなる爆撃にも、またいかなる戦争にも反対する、核兵器廃絶を求める、平和の大切さを求める活動を行う、広い新しい世代にもこれを継承してもらうよう取り組むため、広く共同行動を取ることを約束する、以上の4項目であります。この協定は翌2013年4月16日にドイツ連邦共和国のドレスデン市の戦争被害者団体、広島市の原爆被爆者団体、および日本国における最後の空爆地秋田市土崎の 空爆被害者団体、すなわち3カ国ごとしの被害者団体による協力協定に発展しています。本年2017年4月26日のゲルニカ空爆80周年には、28名の平和訪問団を派遣し、子どもたちが描いたキッズゲルニカを寄贈して平和式典に参加するとともに、協力協定を発展させる行動計画について話し合いました。長崎市長は現在、世界の162カ国地域の7417自治体組織で構成される平和首長会議、この副会長を務めています。ちなみにアメリカからは211都市がこれに加盟し、お隣のロシチェスター市も2004年3月に加盟しています。今日は伊坂市長さんにも、田植長崎市長のお便りに添えて、どうぞ一つ加盟していただきたいという要請をするところであります。また日本国内の1619自治体、すべての自治体の約 90.5% が宣言し、322の自治体が加盟する日本非核宣言自治体協議会の会長を務めて、平和発信都市の先進的任務を果たしています。長崎平和推進協会は、核兵器廃絶と平和の推進に官民協力の組織で活動しています。長崎県内の宗教者たちは、1974年に神道、仏教、キリスト教およびその他の諸宗教が教義を超越して核兵器廃絶と平和希求の同一目標を掲げ、爆心地で原爆殉難者慰霊平和の祈りの合同慰霊式典を45年間継続して開催しています。また国立長崎大学は2012年4月に世界でも稀な核兵器廃絶研究センターを設立して、専門的な研究成果を公開し、広く市民を啓発して核兵器廃絶に向けた情報発信を継続し、活動を発展させています。また政府が募集する安全保障技術研究推進制度につきましては、軍事転用の可能性が否定できないとして、教職員の受託申請を自粛させ、大学として契約を行わない姿勢を貫いています。核兵器廃絶を目指す被爆者国際署名も進んでいます。そして巨大絵画ゲルニカと同様に、縦 3.5 メートル、横 7.8 メートルのキャンパスに、子どもたちが描く平和の願いを込めたキッズゲルニカは、すでに50枚以上が長崎の地で作成され、平和の使者として世界を巡っています。この地を訪れる直前に3つの悲しみが相次ぎました。8月30日に原爆被爆の体現者で日本原爆被害者団体協議会代表委員谷口澄輝さんが亡くなりました。続いて9月2日には世界平和アピール7人委員会メンバーで元長崎大学学長、長崎市名誉市民土山秀夫さんが亡くなるという不幸に出会いました。さらに9月3日には北朝鮮による6回目の核実験の暴挙がありました。これには激しい怒りを込めて抗議文を送り、核兵器の廃絶を求めました。私たち長崎市民はこのような悲しみを あるいは怒りを乗り越えて、世界平和の実現を決して諦めてはいません。核兵器の最後の一発が廃棄され、自然エネルギーの再生により、原発被害に怯えることのない社会実現に向かって前進し続けます。長崎、must be the last. Thank you very much.
I have also brought some gifts for our president and our mayor and these beautiful things of
市長からはお手紙と記念品が送られます。預かってまいりましたので皆様にお送りしましょう。長崎の鳩をデザインしたバッジ、私たち被爆者手帳友の会が、デザインして配布しておりますベル、ピースベル、これを送りたいと思います。平和を願っておられた千羽鶴ですけども、これを一緒に添えていきたいと思います。
It's a origami claim for the prayers for peace from Nagasaki. So I'll make sure to deliver this to our president and mayor. Thank you very much, and so have a
坂の市長さんには特にお願いがありまして、世界市長会議にどうぞお加入くださいという要請文を差し上げたいと思います。お願いします。
So、this is a application form to join AS. So please give some pressure to the And I now like to introduce our discussant, Dr. Yuki Miyamoto from DePaul University and Chicago. She teaches ethics in the Department of Religious Studies at DePaul. She's the author of Beyond the Mushroom Cloud, Commemoration, Religion, and Responsibility after Hiroshima. Had an opportunity to read this book, and I was quite inspired. That's why I invited you here. It's a really kind of rare analysis of religious and spiritual dimensions of experiences of atomic bombing in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I invite her to put Ms. Dehara's presentation in the context of Japan's peace activism and also today's role.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today, and I appreciate Professor Miyazaki for inviting me here. What I would like to do today is to hope to put Mr. Ihara's testimony into a historical context. And thereby, I would also like to challenge the national narrative of the atomic bombings, both in the United States and in Japan, as well as the subsequent, the Cold War framework. And I also would like to get to what is at stake if we don't, and touches upon the global hibakusha, which Mr. Ihara already is working on it, it seems like from his presentation. And if the time permits, I only have 15 minutes, so we will see. But if the time permits, I would also like to talk about North Korea's threat. How can we think about North Korea's threat in this historical context or in the nuclear discourse? So let me begin with the national narrative. The atomic bombings in 1945 has been often understood as either retaliation of the Pearl Harbor, but this might be a little bit obsolete. I don't hear this much from my students anymore, and especially the Manhattan Project, the budget was passed a day before the Pearl Harbor attack. The second one, which is probably much more prevalent, both in the United States and in Japan, is that the bomb ended the war quickly and thereby saved American lives as well as the Japanese lives. And numerous scholars actually have already challenged this sort of national discourse. For example, Barton Bernstein, his article, A Post-War Myth, half a million U.S. lives saved. He is discussing in this article, he's discussing that how the number increased as we received the information of the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So there is the number inflation going on, which was not necessarily based upon the facts. Another one is Adam Goodhart in the same edited volume, the article entitled The Invasion That Never Was. And interestingly, he is calling into question this framework, which we are probably familiar with, either dropping the bomb or invading the Japan proper archipelago. And often the case, it seems like we were presented two evils and we were forced to choose this or evil. However, he is not making a direct connection. So, however, what he is insinuating there in his article is that, because Operation Olympic, which is the plan to invade Japan, was not actually seriously discussed in the military. And therefore, there might have been the third way, or maybe fourth or fifth, other options. And by that time, Japan was already crumbling down and in the midst of the negotiation to end the war. So, and then the US or the Allied powers have already taken, after brutal battles, already taken Okinawa and the other islands. So they could have stayed there. Just wait there to see Japan just tumbling down. So that could be, but yet the question for us is why we buy into this framework either or, and what does that do to us? And of course, the Japanese national narrative, which has been up until the 90s, talking about the atomic bombing is often considered as something that lefties do. And it seems to me that it has coincided with the death of the Showa Emperor that finally we can talk about the atomic bombing, because talking about the atomic bombing also leads us to the discussion of war responsibility. So talking about the war responsibility, especially on the emperor, was long taboo and perhaps still is. So therefore, after that, for example, prime ministers come to Japan, come to Hiroshima and Nagasaki every summer. It has been ritualized, but it was not like that all the time, always. In the 70s, there were two prime ministers visiting Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but it was not ritualized like we do now in Japan. They do now in Japan. And especially focusing and emphasizing the victimhood also serves their purpose. And Mr. Ihara was also talking about Japanese atrocities and war crimes. Focusing and highlighting the victimhood would help them not to face that responsibility of their war crimes. So in that sense, the national narratives works and serves the purpose. And then we can see what the purposes are. And between 1954 and 1949, the theologians and other scientists, physicists, were wondering how we should think of the atomic bombing. And the discourse was rather ambiguous, which drastically changed in 1949 when the Soviet Union succeeded the atomic bomb test, and then arms race began. If you have time, I don't play this, but there is a wonderful video which is eerie, but at the same time very mesmerizing, nuclear bomb tests made by the images made by Isamu Hashimoto. So if you Google Isamu Hashimoto and the nuclear, then you will probably get to this video. It's only 15 minutes. And there, now, the enemy has it, so the nuclear weaponry is itself, of itself, is not necessarily an evil. It's neutral. The moral worth depends on who possesses it and how to use it. So it seems like there was a change in the discourse. And as Mr. Ihara was telling us that nuclear arsenals across the world, so there are way too many. We can destroy the whole world, the entire world, many times. And also nuclear tests, which Mr. Ihara introduced us. But just, so there are so far 8 countries have tested, officially tested. I'm not usually, I'm not here including Israel, but other than that, 8 countries officially tested or officially proven that they have tested, conducted nuclear tests. So for example, Pakistan, we often hear and we fear Pakistan because it's Islamic country, the only Islamic country which has nuclear weapons, but they only had one nuclear test in 1998. And India, it's also a nuclear country, but they only did twice in 1974. The second time was actually 1998, only 2 weeks apart between Pakistan and in Pakistan's nuclear test. So now we got 2 countries down, 6 to go. Would you like to take a wild guess? What's the next country, or how many? Anyone? Oh, yes.
Russia, China, France, the United Kingdom, China.
Okay. China, Russia, France?
Yeah, United States, China.
United States?
United Kingdom.
UK?
Russia.
France.
Missing one.
North Korea.
North Korea, thank you. Yes. I feel also, like I'm repeating myself, but.
Also, South Africa had news, but then dismantled them later.
Right. And then that was not necessarily the immoral reason, which is kind of disappointing. But thank you, yes. Thank you, that's very good. Yes, North Korea, as Mr. Ihara was saying, 6 nuclear tests. So 5 more, so 5 of those countries, do you wanna take a wild guess how many? Which country, how many? Anyone? The next one is just, I'm feeling a little bit time conscious here. The next one is actually China. How many would you say? 42. And next is UK, which is also 43. And we got 5 countries down, so now 3 more to go? France. How many would you say? 60. Yeah, we wish. France, 212. And 2 more. That would be easier, right? Right, Soviet Union, which is how many? 714. And the US, so our country, right? And how many? The US. Not that many, few. It's only 1,032.
How about Israel?
No, I didn't include. Part of the reasons is that I was not able to get the data. And often most of these numbers came from the bulletin of the atomic scientists research. But thank you for asking. Yes, and so it seems like there is a huge discrepancy that we are so afraid of other countries' nuclear weapons and North Korea. By no means I downplay the six times nuclear tests done by North Korea, by no means. However, this discrepancy that we don't even know how many times we have done, and this huge number seems to be a little bit alarming to me. Well, more than a little alarming to me. And so that's why I wanted to share. And then this also has to do with the national narrative, how we have understood the atomic bombing, because it saved us and it still continued to protect us. So I would like to show how it's protecting us after 1,032 tests. So nuclear test sites, as you can see, the Marshall Islands, which is right here, Marshall Islands, and some of the tests are done in, of course, Nevada, New Mexico, but Missouri, Alaska, and California. But among those, I would like to draw your attention, 67 nuclear tests, this is atmospheric tests, were conducted on the Marshall Islands, while Marshall Islands were still a territory of the US. The Marshall Islands became independent in 1986, but those tests were done in the 40s, right after, like in 46 through 50s. And then there is a recently declassified document called Project 4.1. In there is a sentence, it reads, "They are more like us than mice." And 91% of the Marshall Islanders, even though they evacuated once, and then they returned after the test, but they were falling into acute radiation sickness. So they evacuated again. Some of them migrated to Hawaii, but it's more like diaspora because of those tests. And also Nagasaki bomb was made in Hanford, Washington State. And this site, it is said that this was the most contaminated area in the world because of the residue and nuclear waste. So Hanford health issues. I would like to draw your attention to, in red letters, 208 million liters, which is 55 million gallons of high-level radioactive waste in 177 underground tanks, which is leaking. And just recently, there was a tunnel collapsed, the tunnel which those tanks were buried. So it's a dire situation there. And also Hiroshima bomb, with the uranium was enriched in St. Louis, which is not much known, partly because after the national facility enriched the uranium, that was sold to private companies, which was also sold to another private companies, and which was also sold another. So the liability is very ambiguous and obscured because of that. But St. Louis recently, it was 72 years ago, right? But the nuclear waste accumulated and people didn't know the history of the community, and so lots of suffering right now among the citizens, younger ones as well. So given that, it seems a little bit insensitive to talk about mutually assured destruction or nuclear deterrence. And I would like to call into question where that kind of rhetoric, that kind of discourse came into being, and how does that serve, or who does that serve? Who is actually, who is protected? So other contaminated sites, and perhaps the closest, even though it's not that close, is perhaps the third bullet point. That's a Brookhaven National Lab. So interestingly, after the millennium, female writers started talking about their upbringings, how that was actually in retrospect, how their upbringings, how their childhood were, in a way, tarnished by the contaminated land. So that's why I'm talking about this. It's because I don't want Mr. Ihara's experiences and activities to be considered as something like happened 72 years ago, far away, somewhere in a little island in the East, which probably is very dangerous. And I would like to call into question the framework of the nuclear discourse, and hopefully that we can work together with Mr. Ihara. So I guess it's been 15 minutes. I can go on a little bit? Thank you. So the North Korean missile flew over Japan, so you can see 5 and 6 where they flew over. But at the same time, those, I don't know if this is clear enough, but those pink areas are the prefectures. It's like states in the United States. And it also says how many square miles the US bases occupy. And so therefore, it's in Japanese airspace, but the control is not held by the Japanese government, but the US government. So the commercial air flight often go around. So that's why it seems like it's almost avoiding those bases. But more importantly, if the Japanese government, let me go back to this. When the North Korean missiles, especially the last two occasions in August and September, the Japanese government issued this J alert. And so everyone was receiving this alert through their cell phones. However, if they are really, and I wonder if the Japanese government was taking their threat seriously, even though they very much want the subject or the citizens to fear. Like, for example, as you can see, the Korean Peninsula is very close, and also the Pyongyang and the missile test site is so close. But then Japanese government, as Mr. Ihara was saying, trying to restart all nuclear power plants. And it's so close, yet they are not trying to get rid of it, but restart it. And how easy it would be for North Korea to just toss a missile and, you know, aim at one of those nuclear power plants. And if a couple of those would be sufficient to destroy the entire country. So there is another discrepancy between the Japanese government and the Japanese government want the citizens to think about. And then that probably corresponds to what Mr. Ihara was talking about, how the government actually want to remilitarize Japan again. So Broken Arrows, I want to talk a little bit about this. Since 1950, so we have many tests, but also there are Broken Arrows situations. So I just list a couple in 1950s, how many bombs we have lost and how many bombs we have not yet retrieved. And this is 1960s. And especially the last bullet point, this Spain, we actually dropped four, and then two got detonated and severely contaminated the area. Fortunately, that was not a residential area, but still decontamination work is still going on. But the problem is this 1,400 tons of contaminated soil, even though you removed it, where would you put that? So the decontamination is actually transcontamination. You are just passing it to somewhere. So that's the serious issues, and especially plutonium, half-life is 24,000 years. So, okay, so then coming back to my first, my game plan for today is this. So the stake is, well, we are not really seeing our own hibakusha of our own, and thereby we are actually, and we are actually, the risk is ourselves. And so I wanted to call into question this idea of nuclear bombs, nuclear weapons protecting us. And I think that's all. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Hiroshi Asada. My wife Stormy and I drove 5.5 hours from Connecticut to see Misahihara. Misahihara's son and my wife were high school friends. So thank you for having us. My question is the idea of owning nuclear weapons or any armed forces is a deterrent of war. So if you have you have nuclear power, and others have nuclear power, others probably don't. Think twice before they drop bombs. So this idea of owning nuclear power is a deterrent, and I'd like to hear your take on that notion. So, 私の質問はその核兵器を持つことっていうのはその抑止力になるっていう考え方がありますよね。それで多分それが理由で他の国もみんなその、持ち続けてるんだと思うんですけども、でその考え方が多分変わらないと、なくならんじゃないかと思うんですけど、その井原さんはそういう考え方に対してどういうふうに思われますか。その要するに核兵器を持つことは抑止力になるっていう。
長いこと核兵器が抑止力になるという私は真話だというふうに思っています。 今や核兵器を持っていることの負担、例えばより小型化するためにこれがひょっとしてテロに渡るんじゃないかというような不安を抱えている国々が多いと思います。
Risks are involved in the position of nuclear weapons enormous now, and the potential uses for terrorist attacks.
ですから、実はオバマ大統領の最後の遺産といいますか、そういうことに期待したのは核の先制不使用という政策を取ってもらいたい。しかしこれには核の傘の下にある日本政府などなどが誤った考え方がプレッシャーをかけたということを知らされています。
President Obama's declaration not to use nuclear weapons as a tool to attack I think the Japanese government still ostensibly, explicitly is using nuclear umbrellas as part of their national security policy. So the Japanese government is actually exerting negative pressure against that notion of President Obama expressed at that time.
ボタンを押すのは皆無なんでしょうか。私はそのことも恐れます。マンハッタン探空調査団というのが、1945年9月11日10日に、日本に来まして、その責任者がですね、あまりの感情にこれは人類のために使うべきではなかったという反省のことを述べておりますが、そういうことがまだ未だに出されていないということを残念に思っています。
So, how is the possibility that the nuclear weapons launched by mistake and also the investigation team that is the just after the bombing expressed the possibility perhaps that this should never have been used. I never want to use that again, but I think what he's stressing is that the governments, the various governments that under all nuclear weapons are facing all kinds of risks of simply possessing them, and but at the same time, it's possible that nuclear weapons are involved by the state up through happenstance and events.
抑止力というものが正当だとするならば、すべての国が核兵器を持ったら抑止力になるんでしょうか。そういう疑問があります。
So if we still pursue the idea of deterrent, perhaps every single country should own possess nuclear weapons. Does that make any sense?
ですから、国連憲章もそうですけれども、第一回決議というのがありますが、国連の目標に核兵器廃絶というのが第一回の決議に出されておりますけれども、これをまだ人類は成し得ていないということですね。これは原子力発電所もそうですけれども、本当に人類で共存できるのだろうか、私たちは疑問を持っていますので、抑止力も一つの神話だというふうに私は考えております。
The very first declaration the United States, United Nations made was to remove abolish nuclear weapons, but that hasn't been realized. And so I firmly believe that the idea of deterrent is nothing bad again.
Hi. I had a question for Mr. Ohara. I was wondering what sort of distinctions he sees between nuclear disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation. Because, some of the concerns about nuclear weapons are that terrorists can get their hands on them, or there can be accidents. But if there's non-proliferation, that means that more countries, some of which might be unstable, wouldn't get them. But really powerful countries like the United States or Russia or great powers might still possess them. And if only really powerful countries possess nuclear weapons, would that not hopefully prevent, build on the deterrent question, would that not hopefully prevent another world war? Because, before the sort of modern era, world wars and great wars were very common. They caused unimaginable suffering as well. There are entire areas of France that are still uninhabitable because of World War I. And I was wondering that is there a distinction between nuclear disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation? And if there is, and there is at least some semblance of a difference, if there's at least some semblance of a deterrent if only really powerful countries have nuclear weapons, what would the right balance be between, having them to prevent a war where conventional weapons cause unimaginable suffering versus the risk of having them themselves unleash unimaginable suffering? And also, what do technologies like missile shields or anti-ballistic missiles that can shoot down missiles have?
Yes, sorry, this is long enough to speak.
LGBT 再検討会議 あの、NPT 体制というのがありますね、NPT。それは、ある意味では、不十分な体制だと思います。核兵器を持っている国を5つの国に特定して、これを認め、軍縮をさせるということです。それ以外の国は持たせないということです。しかし、持っている5つの、全部9つになってますけれども、持っているアメリカ、イギリス、フランス、ロシア、中国、これは軍縮を、核軍縮を進めるという約束ごとになっているわけですけれども、いまだに進んでいないということです。したがって拡散をしていくと思います。しかし、拡散するによって危険性は増しているんじゃないでしょうか。今、北朝鮮に対する、本当にこの暴挙に対する世界の攻撃が集中しております。同時にモデル国も北朝鮮を非難すると同時に既に核兵器を持っている国々も削減するという努力を約束を守らなければならないという責任があるというふうに私は考えております。特に日本は小さな列島に54カ所の原子爆弾、原子力発電施設を持っています。ここにもしものことがあるとすれば、原子爆弾を落とされたと同じ現象が出てくるのではないかなというふうに思っています。
これがあるのって大変です。I think nuclear non-proliferation is very insufficient.And it's because right now there are 9 countries have nuclear weapons, but basically the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China, those 5 are the ones leading the nuclear disarmament. But they themselves promised that they would do the same, but they have not done that yet. And ironically, because of non-proliferation treaty, actually,nuclear weapons were spreading. That's what I'm afraid of, and that's what I'm seeing. And for example, North Korea. North Korea is being blamed by those 5 countries and others, the countries which have nuclear weapons. However, they themselves have not kept their promise. And in Japan, for example, we have 54 nuclear power plants. And if something happens to one of those, then it would end the country. So I don't think the nuclear non-proliferation is working. And let me ask 2 other questions that you posed. それからですね、もし、あ、but I guess by saying that, I think he also addresses your second question, right? So is that okay?Yeah, I guess let's move on.
Perhaps the final question.
Thank you for your talk. This is a conversation about the technologies of nuclear war and everything, but more on how, I want to know what.Do you think the role of religion is in navigating these conflicts?
Role of what?
Religion.
Okay. For Ms. Ehara? Okay. 宗教の役割ってどうお考えになりますか？例えば核に関して核を兵器なくしておこうとするとか、その紛争なくそうとか、その平和に関して。
先ほどもちょっと紹介いたしましたけれども、カトリックも日本の仏教も、先の戦争に加担したという反省がありました。したがって、カトリックの崩壊の中で平和を守るために日本の違いを超えて協力しようという動きが出てまいりまして、長崎もそれに呼応して45年間宗教の違いを超えて平和のために連携しています。したがって宗教はもともとイスラムもそうですけれども、イスラムというのは平和という意味だなというふうに思っています。平和を求めるのが宗教の真髄だというふうに思っておりますので、今あたかも戦争が宗教の違いによって起こっているかのように言われているけれども、 私は宗教の心は平和だというふうに思います。
Okay, well, I have a microphone here. So Catholics and Japanese Buddhism, actually, regrettably, they helped the war efforts during the World War II. So because of that, they regretted it and then repented it, and they are promoting ecumenical movement. And Nagasaki as well, those different religious traditions work together, have been working together for 45 years by now, and then they are having this interreligious relations. And I think Islam, what I hear is that Islam means peace, and I think that the true essence of religion is aiming for peace. So it seems like as if the war was breaking out, or what the war was happening, it's because of religion, but I think that's not the case. So that's how religion can contribute to peace.
Well, thank you, Yuki, for your help. And so so it's already 6 o'clock, so I would just like to thank you again for coming, and I'd like also to mention that there'll be one more event later this semester in this series, Things of Knowledge and Dialogue, is called Global Justice and Peace. So please stay tuned. I also would like us to thank Mr. Ihara for traveling all the way from Nagasaki to